Welcome to For the Love of Books, That Didn't Happen in the Book, a podcast by North Lancashire Libraries.
Hello, and welcome to That Didn't Happen in the Book. This is our first episode. Every month or so, we're going to do a book that's been made into a film. We're going to have a chat about it. It's probably just going to turn into a load of nonsense, let's be honest. But that's the hook that we've got for you. And I am joined today by my very special guest. He is the author of Happiness is Wasted on Me and Say They Call the Polis. He is the Morecambe to my Wise, the Bart Simpson to my Homer.
Am I the small one or the tall one? Which one's Morecambe and which one's Wise again?
He is Mr. Kirtland Ciccone. Say hello.
Hello, I am Kirtland Ciccone and I'm in debt.
Well, there you go. If you've learned nothing else from this episode, you've learned that being a local author makes you no money.
Local and worldwide.
There you go. Worldwide in his mind.
Yes, thank you.
Okay, so for our first edition, we are going to take a look at Stephen King's classic Carrie.
Yes, an iconic book.
Yes.
The reason we chose Carrie first, the fact that we're both big Stephen King fans aside, every year, Andrew, myself and some of our friends, we have a big Halloween bash every year. We watch films, we go to the cinema, we eat lots of food, our diabetes gets worse. And last year, one of our friends, as you'll remember, Andrew, read Carrie, and when I put the film on, what did she keep saying all the way through it?
That didn't happen in the book.
And I thought, right, this could be...
That didn't happen in the book.
It's too much, we said. Claire, stop it. Of course it didn't happen in the book. So we thought Carrie's got to be the first one. It's got to be our first episode.
Yes. So that's a bit of background. I didn't even really introduce myself, did I? I don't think I did. I'm Andrew, just in case. I didn't say that. I just introduced
you. Yeah, but they'll see it on the podcast.
I'm not, not important enough. Obviously. Yeah. So let us take a look at Carrie.
Yeah.
And what's your initial thoughts, Mrs. Ciccone, about the differences?
So I first read Carrie at Cumbernauld High School in the mid to late 90s. I can't remember the exact year. And I loved it, of course. I already felt I knew a lot about it because I watched the film before I read the book.
Ah, I see.
And there are quite a few differences. You could argue that the book hasn't actually been turned into a film yet because it's so different in places. One thing that I did find very different was Carrie herself. She comes across in the book a bit unhappy at her lot, mm-hmm. because obviously if you were raised by Margaret the way Miss Carrietta is, you would be. Whereas in the film, Sissy Spacek plays her a lot more meek. She's very nice. She wants to fit in. She wants people to like her. So that is the main difference for me. Plus the way the book is told or written as well.
Yeah. Yeah. So the book, and this is, I think, the big difference, I suppose, in the structure, is that the book is written from a point of view of looking back,
yes.
on what's happened. So it's quite ominous. There's quite an ominous tone to it because you know from the beginning,
something bad has happened.
Something bad's going to happen. So it's made up of lots of newspaper reports, articles,
yes.
People's diary entries.
What is the word for that? There is it epistolary? Is that the word? And it's told, I'm pretty sure that's the word. And it's told, you know, in context using memoir entries, files, newspaper.
So. I think epistolary.
Yes,
epistolary. I can't say the word. I think that's
her,
like,
neighbours as well, like, get to speak about her. Yeah. So it's told that way. So you get to know about Carrie's life, like surroundings, a lot better.
I think, because of the structure, because of how the book's structured and the fact that you know from the outset that something bad's going to happen. I think they even say at some point during it, maybe, that Sue's the only survivor.
Night of the Black Prom. Uh-huh. What a brilliant
book
title.
So you know that it's not going to go well.
Mm-hmm.
The film, if you come to the film first without knowing how it's going to end, you don't really know that. There's no, because it's structured so differently, it's the build up and you're thinking what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't know how terrible it's all going to end.
The thing is, so, like, just for context for our listeners, I'm a big reader and Andrew is a cinephile, so he knows all about films and he reads as well and I watch some films, but I didn't realise how different the film was until I sort of watched it and compared, because I haven't seen the film in years. So last year when we watched it, Brian De Palma as a director, was he at the height of his power when that film came out? What was...
I have no idea. He, let's say yes.
He done a really cool film. And the way, there's parts of the film that I really like when you see sort of the split screen. Do you remember that? The split screens at prom at the end. We're getting ahead of ourselves, but that's my favourite part. When he starts doing the split screens and the different colours, and it's sort of almost Dario Argento-esque, the sort of bright green and the bright red. And you see Carrie sort of looking around and stuff. So yeah, the way the film's presented is very different to the book as well.
And it's interesting that you said how you had seen the film first.
Yes.
But that was the opposite. Mm-hmm. I had read the book way back,
so was Claire,
years and years ago. And I hadn't watched the film until I met you.
Mm-hmm.
And you kept talking about it. I had read the book and it was years later before I watched the film. I think because there was so much distance, I didn't immediately notice how different it was.
And you were so struck by my uncanny impression. You said, this is exactly what Kirkland has said it's going to be like.
Yes. But then rewatching it again recently for this, rewatching it and reading it again, you can see the differences between it more distinctly.
I mean, Piper Laurie's performance is not the same as everyone else's performance in the film,
and it's a very different type of character from how she is in the book.
Oh yeah,
there's that weird bit where she goes to the woman's house with the basket.
She's very dressed. Was that in the book?
Not that. I don't remember that either. I don't think in the book she interacts with anybody other than Carrie.
Well, they all feel sorry for her. Well, the neighbour that she goes to see feels sorry for Carrie, but no one in the book seems to feel sorry for her.
And they're physically very different as well.
Yeah.
The book describes them as... There's a lot mentioned of how the large...
Yes. Carrie's weight. Carrie and Sissy Spacek in the book.
And I think the mum's described as being a very, very big woman and all this kind of thing. And neither of the two actresses are at all.
No.
Sissy Spacek's very, very small.
Yes.
So that's a choice.
Big, big difference right away. But then Piper Laurie's performance, it's so over the top, and the rest of the film downplays itself. It's very serious and it treats its subject very seriously. I don't know if she thought she was in a comedy or something. It's so camp. It's like drag queens would just love Piper Laurie as Margaret. I always thought she was just so fabulous, you know, when I watched it. As a child, I just thought her mum was my favourite character in the film, even though in the book you absolutely despise her. She's so horrible. Stephen King has a brilliant way of making you hate his villains. He does a good, realistic and over the top hateful villain. And that's one of his skills. But also, can I just add, Andrew, in the book, when I first read the book back at high school, I felt like a lot of what I was reading in it, I'd read before in other books, but it's because a lot of those authors went back and ripped Stephen King off.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of the familiarity of Carrie, while I was reading it for the first time, I've encountered years later in a lot of other books before I read Carrie. It's a testament to his influence.
I think as well, Stephen King, particularly as he's gone on in his career, has tended to at times... His books become quite long and wieldy.
And Carrie
is very short. It's very short. It's, you know, the prose is very kind of spare.
Yeah.
And it lends itself well to a film. Possibly, I mean, we will discuss shortly that Stephen King's books don't necessarily translate well to cinema and TV.
Not always.
But I think the length of Carrie and the fact that it doesn't need a lot of editing, really. I mean, the basic storyline is the same, although there's changes to the characters and there's changes to how it's structured.
Yeah.
The plot itself is pretty faithful.
Yes.
And there's scenes in the book that are faithful.
It's just told in a more simple way, because like I said earlier, I don't think you could directly adapt the way the book is into film, because how would you tell that film? How would you show that on screen, all the book entries and all the new stuff? And it would just be too difficult. So I think Brian De Palma done a really good job, even though Claire was mortified and scandalised at how different it was.
I always remember the bit that makes me go, what? It's that bit where they go like shopping, the boys just shop.
Oh god, one of them's wearing a t-shirt as well. One of them's wearing like one of those t-shirts that's got like a bow tie on it, like a tuxedo t-shirt. And also there's the Tommy, the main sort of male teen character, and he's got that perm. Like only in the 70s could a perm be worn by a jock and all the girls could fancy him.
But I wondered if those scenes, you know, them getting, you know, going to buy outfits, and even the scene where Carrick's mum goes to speak to the neighbour and all that kind of thing, whether they'd included partly to lighten it slightly.
And also to show these other people have lives of their own outside of Carrie, even though Carrie's going to be the centre point of what happens afterwards. I think as well, let's talk about Sue Snell for a moment. Sue Snell's the other character in the book who you really get to know. And she feels so bad about what happens to Carrie in the shower that she sets up this elaborate plan to get her boyfriend to take Carrie to the prom. Big mistake, you know, shows that being nice and doing good things doesn't always pay. And then she survives, and she's the lone survivor of the night of the Black Prom, everything that happens, whereas her boyfriend, now am I right to say in the book he starts to like Carrie, or is it Sue starts to feel insecure after Carrie gets her makeover?
I think there's probably undertones that he starts to like her. I know that in the musical, which will come... I think they tried to portray a bit of that.
Yeah.
But I remember reading that the actors had said that there was no build up to it in the script.
Yeah.
It was like suddenly in the scene before they all die.
Yeah.
And the actors were going, "How did we play this? Where did this come from? There's been no, we've just got to pretend that he's in love with her in one scene."
They need to read the book. They need to go back to the source material.
Yes. But yeah, I think it's a successful
adaptation.
Successful adaptation for all of you.
Well, let's take a look then generally at Stephen King books. So right now Salem's Lot apparently is going straight to streaming, which I think is crazy because people would go to the cinema to see a Stephen King vampire film. I know he didn't like The Shining, infamously hated it, which, funnily enough, let's talk about our friend again, Claire, loved the film. Absolutely loved it, but she loved the book as well. Now this is the funny thing. Who was it? I think it was another friend who said she read The Shining and she didn't find it scary, and yet she got nightmares afterwards. She started to have nightmares about the book. So The Shining's one. What else? The Tommyknockers.
Oh.
The Tommyknockers.
So, we started to give people an idea why we're laughing. We did, we recorded a pilot of
this
a few weeks ago just to see how we got on with. And the conversation went like this. I said something along the lines of, you know, Stephen King's film adaptations weren't necessarily universally good or something. And you said, oh, yes, but some of them are very good. And I said, yes, and some of them were the Tommyknockers.
Yes.
Because it's terrible.
But it was a TV movie and it's got that 90s feel. I can always sort of spot when a TV show, what decade it came from. Episodes of Murder, She Wrote. Some look 80s, some look 90s. Yeah. The Tommyknockers look
it's the very cast
90s.
As well.
Yes.
It's Mark Helgenbelgold, or whatever her name is.
Yes.
CSI.
And Jimmy Smits.
Jimmy Smits, which led us into whatever happened to Jimmy Smith's career.
Well, I didn't know anything had happened, but you educated me.
Well,
you.
I didn't even really know, because when we spoke about this previously, I had said, well, he did NYPD Blue. He was.
You had no idea. I thought that was before the Tommyknockers.
No. So he replaced David Caruso. Make like David Caruso's career, Ike!
Whatever happened to David Caruso?
Well, who knows? And so he replaced him, and then he was killed off, and you said to me, who replaced him? And I said, Ricky Schroeder, and then Zach off Saved by the Bell.
Oh my
God. So that was Jimmy Smith's. And other than that, we couldn't really think of anything that he had done. And then our librarian here, who had been eavesdropping on our conversation, proceeded to kind of berate us because we had forgot that Jimmy Smith's played Princess Leia's adopted father.
All that and
success. The Star Wars prequels. Mm-hmm. How could we forget that?
This is the thing. So obviously a bit of context here as well. We're actually recording this live in Cumbernauld Library right now. So everyone can hear us and they're looking at us right now thinking, who are these two lunatics? But yes, Jimmy Smith.
Yes.
I'm so glad he done well, Ned.
So glad he did. I'm not sure what he's doing now. He was in Dexter as well for a while.
All right, great.
So there you go.
Great.
He does have a career. We apologise, Lindsay, for suggesting the last time that Jimmy Smits did nothing. There you go. That's
and,
my public service announcement.
Other adaptations, It, Part 1 and Part 2, which we both enjoyed. We went to the cinema.
So nobody will be able to see this apart from me.
Oh, my Lord.
But I will describe it to you. When we saw, now, the first Part 1 of It, we enjoyed.
Yes.
Part 2 of It.
Part 2 of It.
Part 2 of It. Consisted of lots of scenes of
adult actors portraying younger versions of themselves.
Yes.
And they would walk into the room with the younger version, the actor playing you, and just look at a distance, and then a flashback.
Go to fast.
I just couldn't believe it. However, there's also other adaptation. I mean, the TV movie of it is classic. Yeah. Like Tim Curry.
And funnily enough, it was on one of the Sky channels the other week when I was flicking through, and I ended up sitting watching half of it again.
It's so
Tim
good.
Tim Curry's terrifying.
He's so scary.
I find Tim Curry terrifying just in general.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even in Home Alone 2, when he's just being the concierge or whatever he is, the man in the hotel, I find him terrifying in everything.
And he's in a film, you know, Trump's in that film as well, and the fact that you're more frightened of Tim Curry, his amazing power as a performer, really.
I think my way into Stephen King, I suppose, was The Stand.
Oh, really? The book or the TV movie?
The TV movie, really. The original miniseries.
You'd still be reading the book now if you started it back in the 90s.
It was like 10 hours. Mm-hmm. Now we wouldn't call that a miniseries. We would call that just like a series.
Yeah.
That's what everything is now.
Mm-hmm.
I remember the miniseries being on Sky One. I'm talking sort of mid to late 90s here. And at the time, I was doing 6 years studies English, and our teacher, we were doing Pride and Prejudice as part of the course, and our teacher said to us, oh, there's a fantastic, I really don't know whether I want to do an Irish accent, because I feel like that's mocking her. I won't. She says, there's a new version of Pride and Prejudice going to be on TV on Sunday night, and I want everybody to watch it so we can talk about it next week. And, of course, this was the famous, now, Colin Firth, Pride and Prejudice. So the first episode was on BBC One, 9 o'clock on the Sunday night, at the same time as the first sort of two-hour part of It. No, not It. Of
The Stand.
Of The Stand, the miniseries. And, obviously, I didn't watch Pride and Prejudice.
Oh, of course not.
Obviously not. But what I didn't realise when we came into the class the next time, that all of us had watched The Stand.
Oh dear.
And none of us had watched Pride and Prejudice. Oh, the teacher wasn't happy.
Well, I mean,
not happy.
I wanted to do at high school in Scotland, you have something called the RPR, which is you've got to write a really good quality essay about a novel or a few novels. And I wanted to go for a Stephen King novel and write about it. Actually, it might have been Carrie. And I was going to do a thing about, you know, creepy teenagers and horror fiction. The Midwich Cuckoos were going to be there, Lord of the Flies. And my teacher said, quote, No, Kirkland, we want books of literary merit. But this is the thing about Stephen King books. Stephen King comes into fashion and then maybe goes out of fashion and then comes back in. And right now, I think because of the It films, he's back in. And people can really appreciate how amazing he is. Something else that I want to tell us before we go back to talk about Carrie. After the pandemic, one of the first events that we went to with our friends, if you remember, was to see Stephen King at Bloody Scotland. And he was marvellous. He appeared on the screen, and I just remember feeling so happy that we were able to get out, and I wasn't scared anymore of this stupid virus, and we were sitting in a live audience watching Stephen King on the big screen, and I was so grateful. Yeah. You know, because
I mean, it was like a live Q&A.
Yes,
to explain that, it wasn't like just Stephen King on a screen.
he didn't just appear in our dreams.
He was being interviewed. There was a guy there, wasn't there? The guy was interviewing him on the screen.
Yes,
and there was.
It was live. It was like by Zoom.
Was it Linwood Barclay?
Yes, Linwood Barclay as well.
Yeah. It was quite cool to see him.
I was so grateful. It was like I felt alive for the first time in like 7 months or something. It was all because we got to see Stephen King.
That's right. And ironically, in the pandemic, was when they had just released the new updated miniseries of The Stand.
He's always relevant.
Be more
this is the thing. We're talking about fashions coming in and going out of fashion like all authors do. But I always feel that Stephen King is always relevant. He's always ahead of the curve. Sometimes too ahead of the curve. He writes about, you know, zombies on mobile phones and things, and you know, I think that's very relevant. He gets it. He always gets it. Pet Sematary, the scariest book ever, which I think is the scariest novel for me personally, Pet Sematary, that's on the big screen. It done really, really well.
But here's an interesting thing. They keep remaking these things. So they both had, because we had Pet Sematary, and then they did Pet Sematary 2 with, I want to say, Edward Furlong.
Really?
Yeah, way back in
the I remember 80s. The original Pet Sematary because the Ramones did the soundtrack, and it's such a brilliant song.
But since then, they have remade it for a modern audience. Mm-hmm. And as we've already said, they remade The Stand, they've remade It. They have remade Carrie twice and made a terrible sequel where they brought back Amy Irvine and then killed her off.
Now, I've not seen the remake of Carrie. I didn't watch that, so I'm assuming that it's... Did they do the whole thing? Oh, this is far more faithful to the book than the Brian De Palma version. Did they try that?
I don't remember what they said. They're terrible.
Yeah.
They've done it twice. I think one was a TV movie and one was a cinema movie.
Really? I didn't know about the TV movie.
Yeah. But they have also... Obviously, when you said Stephen King hated The Shining.
Yes.
He made The Shining back in the 90s for... In a two-part TV.
No, I do remember that. Now, why I was excited about that is because Stephen King had a lot more to do with that. Yes. It was more faithful to the source because he always felt, apparently, that Wendy was so misogynistic in the original version of the film, screaming, wailing. I actually thought she was really good in The Shining. She felt like a real character under unreal situations and circumstances. But Rebecca De Mornay played in the remake, and he had more to do with that. And again,
it wasn't very good.
Was it not?
No, it didn't get very good reviews, and the general consensus was that Stephen King didn't like the original because of how different it was to his book.
Yeah.
So the remake was more faithful to the
book. The topiary animals coming to life and stuff.
Maybe there's a reason why they adapted it so heavily because the original didn't really...
I feel if you're going to do Stephen King, though, you've got to give him a good budget. You've got to let him realise his fantastical dreams and nightmares.
Well, speaking of that, before we finish up, let's touch on Carrie the Musical.
Yay!
What a terrible idea. So, a bit of background on this is... Back in, and I've actually just read another book about Carrie the Musical, which its name escapes me.
Which you mean another book? More than one has been written about the musical?
No, talking about Carrie the novel.
Uh-huh.
It was even another book.
I thought you meant someone had written multiple books about musical.
It's one of these books where it's all... Oh, I forget the name of it. But it's where people who were there are all talking about. So it's all... Like,
An oral history.
An oral history, that's the very thing, of Carrie the Musical.
Oh, God.
So the background to this was that these guys, back in the 80s, late 70s, 80s, decided that they thought, that would be a good idea.
Who did you think Carrie would be a great musical?
Well,
really?
The book of the musical, which is the script, for those not in musical theatre parlance, the book was written by the same person who wrote the script of the film.
Oh.
Yes. And the songs, the music, were done by people who had a lot to do with the film of fame. So it was a decent pedigree, and they struggled to try and get it picked up and get people interested. And
I'm not surprised.
And all this kind of thing. And eventually, they managed to get it in co-production with... the Royal Shakespeare Company.
You are kidding.
No, of all things. So the RSC had just did a massive hit, Willie Miss, at which they produced and all the rest of it, and then it became what it is now.
Yeah.
And they were kind of looking for, money-wise, they needed something that would make them money, and they hit on the idea of, we could do another musical. And they... for inexplicable reasons, decided to go with Carrie, the musical. So it was adapted. The problem was that, so they went around all the houses trying to get directors, and eventually the guy who was in charge of the RSC wanted to direct it himself.
You are kidding.
So he wanted to direct it himself, I think because he'd seen what Trevor Nunn had done with him, is he wanted something that, this would make me,
story about a telekinetic girl.
So the initial script and the initial book and everything else was reasonably faithful to the book in the way that the film isn't. So the musical starts with, like the book does, and after everything's happened, the musical starts with Sue Snell being interviewed by the police and talking about everybody dying and how... So it is more faithful in all those respects. Problem was that the director decided he wanted to go down this weird kind of Greco-Roman roots with it all. And,
why?
And steep it all in classic mythology.
Oh my
and
goodness.
How he didn't really want, you know, so it was overblown. Mm-hmm. It was ridiculous. The costumes, they were like crazy. They were dressed in like togas, Roman togas. And it was all about how the internal struggle, it was all related to like classic Greek tragedy and all this kind of thing.
And it really was a tragedy.
It was nonsense. And the actress that they hired to play Margaret White was almost decapitated by the sets. So apparently,
I'm not going to do the impression.
So it was an actress who had been very famous on Broadway back in the 1950s, 1960s. And this was her big comeback.
Oh no, poor
and
woman.
She quite early on in the process realised that it was rubbish. And I can't use the word that she used, but it wasn't rubbish.
Yes,
it was a much
remember we are
word.
In a public library, yes. And people can
so
see
she,
us.
She declared quite early on in the process how terrible the whole thing was, and she couldn't believe she was involved in it. The director then, because of early feedback, decided to cut anything that he felt didn't adhere to his vision. So scenes were cut, songs were cut, it was the structure was altered, dialogue was cut that would explain what was going to happen at different points in the show, to the point that it was just a big mess.
But when you're singing the plot, this is my problem with certain musicals, when you sing the plot, I can't understand what's going on.
I'm trying to think. So one of the first songs is when Carrie's singing, she's singing about herself, and she's, you know, say, why does everybody hate me? Carrie! It's all that. Why does everybody hate Carrie?
It's a theme song for a really bad TV movie.
Yeah, so it was a disaster.
Uh-huh.
It didn't work. They had Debbie Allen of fame, choreographing it. But she was choreographing, and it seemed to be the director was only interested in the scenes between Carrie and her mum. So he directed all of those scenes as if he was in some weird I Claudius type thing. And Debbie Allen was left to basically run all the high school scenes.
Put it out of its misery.
Meaning that nothing...
Put it out of its misery.
Nothing fitted together, and it was a disaster. But my favourite story is that the fake blood at the end, at the prom, was causing too many problems with the microphones that the actors had to wear. And they tried all different things in previews and in rehearsals to see how it would all work. But they couldn't pour all the fake blood over Lindsay Hatley the same way that they do in the film
of
and
course.
In the book,
mm-hmm.
because it was short-circuiting the microphones. And in the end, they put a plastic bucket over her head. A plastic bucket.
That's not going to kill Tommy.
No, they put a plastic bucket over her head, and when they lifted it off, she had like drops of red colouring, food colouring on her face.
Oh.
So terrible, terrible. Then it went to Broadway, huge bomb. And closed after no time at all. And for years since then, it's been a byword of terrible stinker. There's even a book called Not Since Carrie, A History of Broadway Flops.
I mean, this is the thing. Can you imagine being a family and you want to go out to the theatre and you want to go and see a musical and your mum says, let's go and see Carrie. And yes. The first scene is Sue Snell and the police office talking about how everyone died.
So I don't think that, from what I can remember, I don't think that happened in the original version because I think that was one of the scenes that was cut. Retrospect then, to sum up, Carrie, the book... or carry the film?
I'm going to be controversial and say both, but for totally different reasons. I like the book, but if I'm going to reread a Stephen King novel, I never pick up Carrie.
Mm-hmm.
I'll always go for one of the other bigger favourites.
Yeah.
But I would watch the film more probably because, you know, it is a classic for a reason. You know, Brian De Palma, as I said earlier, at the full height of his powers, and... I think it endures. It looks good. And if you are a fan of ridiculous performances, you've got, you know, Piper Laurie being so over the top. That is the part of it I love the most. But I also give props to Sissy Spacek, who plays that with such conviction and such heart. And see when she gets that bucket flung at her or dropped on her, you really feel it. The way she's standing there just with her hands, with that look of shock on her face, you want to go and get those horrible bullies and smack them.
The film kind of transcended, really.
Yes.
Transcended the book, and the film became something of itself.
Yes.
That image of her with the blood dripping on her, the hand coming out, the rest of it.
The Shining film and the book.
Now, Whereas people wouldn't necessarily even know mm-hmm. that it was based on a book. And I think you're right. I think that I enjoy the book,
mm-hmm.
but it wouldn't be my first choice
no.
to go back and reread no. Stephen King.
Because it's an author at the start of his career.
Yep.
He is finding his way forward. And it goes back to what I said earlier. I've read so many books that feel like Stephen King that when I read Carrie, it felt like he'd ripped off other people when it was the other way about. It's them that have ripped him off. But his style, I've done it as well. I mean, who hasn't ripped off Stephen King? But his style is so embedded in popular literature that you can detect it anywhere. And Carrie is one of those books that you see over and over again, people copying that style to have their own book, you know?
So there we go. Carrie. Read the book. Yes. Enjoy the book. Watch the film. And
don't go to the musical. Not that they'll have a chance.
Avoid the musical and don't see Carrie 2. Lessons we've learned today.
I mean, they're important lessons.
Yes, life lessons. Our next podcast,
yes.
Next episode, would you like to tell them what the plan is for the next time? Can you remember?
Well, I've actually got a pad of paper here, so I don't need to remember because I've got it all written down. So the next episode is going to
very,
be...
very, very close to Mr. Ciccone's heart.
Yes, we're doing Agatha Christie's Murder on the Orient Express.
And now the question is, which we actually haven't discussed this hasn't come up. Albert Finney film, Kenneth Branagh film.
Let's do both.
Right.
Because I have so much to say about yes. both, and I am such an Agatha Christie fan.
We could try and fit in the Sushi Poirot episodes.
Oh, he'll get mentioned anyway.
No, it's not that.
He'll get mentioned anyway regardless, because he's my favourite Poirot.
We would love if you were able to tell us whether you've enjoyed our podcast. However, I don't know how they would do that,
Cal. Well, I've got like my official social media. Yes. So you come to that, or you can comment North Lancashire Council's social media.
Let us know if you've enjoyed it, or if you've got any ideas of what you would like us to talk about in a future episode.
And all these books that we've mentioned are available at your local library.
Yes. And yeah, I think that's probably about us for now.
You have officially survived episode 1 of That Didn't Happen in the Book, and I am still in debt.
And on that, see you next time.